Hello and welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 category smart. This is Jesse Colhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, by Jonathan Haidt and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. Morality binds and blinds. It binds us into ideological teams that fight each other as though the fate of the world depended on our side winning each battle. It blinds us to the fact that each team is composed of good people who have something important to say. Jonathan Haidt brilliantly explores in The Righteous Mind why we often can't see the other side of an issue, but rather we stick to our own sense of righteousness. A divisive political climate, for example, stems from key moral drivers that helped us evolve as humans. No wonder it's so difficult to get along. If you have the willingness and courage to look beyond your own limited views, you'll definitely find great value from this timely and engaging book. Jonathan Haidt is a social psychologist, noteworthy author, and professor of ethical leadership at New York University's Stern School of Business. In this Life Note, we'll look at how reasoning is the servant of passions, how social persuasion matters, how moral foundations influence our political views, being selfish versus groupish, and how religion is like football. Hint, team sports. The first big thought: reasoning is the servant of passions. Intuition first, then reasoning. Quote, moral reasoning is sometimes a post hoc fabrication, end quote. We like to think that we are all very rational beings with perfectly good reasons for our beliefs. Yet it turns out, according to the author, that we're often relying on our basic intuition to make judgments about what's right or wrong, and then we scramble to find reasoning that supports our initial gut reaction. So our intuition comes first, and our reasoning then follows. One of the helpful aspects of this book is that it causes you to question, or at least think more deeply about, your own beliefs and your own rationalizations for those beliefs. Haidt explains how he and his team posed case studies to people that were moral dilemmas in order to study their decision-making. Here's one, for example. Quote, a family's dog was killed by a car in front of their house. They had heard that dog meat was delicious, so they cut up the dog's body and cooked it and ate it for dinner. Nobody saw them do this. End quote. Now, if you feel bothered or even slightly outraged by this example, know that it's your intuition immediately kicking in. If you're like others who heard that case study, you're going to find reasons why the family's action was really wrong. But you're likely doing this to justify what you already decided based on your intuition. If you were just relying on rational, objective reasoning, you might actually be able to find reasons why the family might not be wrong in their action. In this provocative way, Haidt examines how our intuition strongly influences our morality, how we will first have this flash of intuition, and then we will go on to rationalize it. Later on in the book, he examines how we use the same thinking process when it comes to politics. Just as you don't want to spend a single minute considering why the family of the dog could be justified, you similarly don't want to consider the Democrat's point of view if you're a Republican, or vice versa, right? If we can be more aware of our own biases when it comes to our beliefs, rather than simply seeking to justify our intuition, we might be more open to hearing the other side of the story. And what a different world we would live in if everyone did that. The second big thought: social persuasion matters. We care a lot about what others think. Quote, many of us believe that we follow an inner moral compass, but the history of social psychology richly demonstrates that other people exert a powerful force, able to make cruelty seem acceptable and altruism seem embarrassing without giving us any reasons or arguments. End quote. Let's face it, we care a lot about what others think, and it significantly impacts our views and our rationale for those points of view. In fact, Haidt tells us that it's pretty rare for us to change our minds about moral issues without being influenced by others. And when you outright challenge someone's views, they're probably just going to dig in their heels and defend their point of view even more vigorously. Haidt writes, quote, "The main way that we change our minds on moral issues is by interacting with other people. We are terrible at seeking evidence that challenges our own beliefs, but other people do us this favor, just as we are quite good at finding errors in other people's beliefs. When discussions are hostile, the odds of change are slight." End quote. This is an interesting point, and it certainly seems to ring true. Somehow we think that if we argue our points more vigorously and often more loudly, then the person with an opposing view is going to suddenly see the light. But let's be realistic. How often does that happen? Almost never, right? If you agree with Haidt's insight that intuition comes first and then reasoning, you'll appreciate his advice that to win the argument, or to have a more productive discussion at least, you must first influence someone's intuition. Someone will more likely be swayed when they gain some new ideas that come from other people, social persuasion. That opens their intuitive door. This especially can happen when there is an affection, admiration, or a desire to please the other person. A little mutual respect can go a long way, it seems. With this more respectful, open-minded approach, the person on the other side of the argument can then begin to be more open to seeing that there might actually be some truth to the other point of view. So, life bookers, try this strategy out next time you're in a debate. Consider the other person's point of view. Lean in a little bit more and see how beneficial this can be in helping to resolve your differences. Big thought number 3. There's a good chance you're a liar. We find justifications for our reasoning. Quote, "Psychologists now have file cabinets full of findings on motivated reasoning, showing the many tricks people use to reach the conclusions they want to reach." End quote. People are remarkable at coming up with justifications for their line of reasoning. We all do it, although we might lack awareness when we're doing it. We talked earlier about social persuasion. In fact, when we find justifications for our reasoning, Haidt explains that, quote, "people care more about appearance and reputation than about reality, and that people are trying harder to look right than to actually be right," end quote. Here's a great metaphor from The Righteous Mind. We all have an in-house press secretary. And just like press secretaries that we see on TV who justify everything no matter how bad the policy, we often do the same thing. We simply justify our line of reasoning. We practice what's called confirmation bias. We figure out how to justify what we already believe. Quote, "people are quite good at challenging statements made by other people. But if it's your belief, then it's your possession, your child almost, and you want to protect it, not challenge it or risk losing it." End quote. The implication, then, is that if you expect someone to be very thoughtful, deliberate, and thorough in weighing all sides of an issue before they make a decision, good luck. That is not likely going to happen. In fact, Haidt says, we lie, cheat, and justify so well that we honestly believe we are honest. We may lie to justify our own reasoning. Now might be a good time to ask yourself, is there anything you're justifying so well that you actually believe it's true? How about the belief, I don't have time to exercise? Or, I'm working too much to take time to play with my kids? Are these truths or justifications? Why not play a little game this week and just start to notice all of the instances where you are righteously justifying something, either to someone else or to yourself, and try challenging that argument? It might be fun to try and catch yourself, and you may be surprised how often you rationalize something that in fact is not really 100% true. Big thought number 4, how moral foundations influence politics. What does fairness mean? Quote, "everyone cares about fairness, but there are two major kinds. On the left, fairness often implies equality, but on the right, it means proportionality. People should be rewarded in proportion to what they contribute, even if that guarantees unequal outcomes." End quote. One of the most thought-provoking parts of The Righteous Mind is the explanation of certain fundamental foundations to our morality and how these drive our beliefs in areas such as politics. These foundations include areas such as care versus harm, fairness versus cheating, loyalty versus betrayal, authority versus subversion, sanctity versus degradation, and liberty versus oppression. Explanations for each of these moral foundations are discussed at length in the book, and it's really fascinating reading. But let's take a look at just one of them as an example, the fairness versus cheating foundation. So we all want fairness, right? Yet how we view fairness certainly differs among individuals, and the differences are noteworthy between political parties. On the left, Haidt explains, quote, "Concerns about equality and social justice are based in part on the Fairness Foundation. Wealthy and powerful groups are accused of gaining by exploiting those at the bottom by not paying their fair share of the tax burden," end quote. Yet if you look at the political right, for example, Haidt points out that they are also concerned with fairness, but it means something different. Quote, "They see Democrats as socialists who take money from hardworking Americans and give it to lazy people," end quote. He goes on to clarify that, quote, "On the left, fairness often implies equality, but on the right, it means proportionality. People should be rewarded in proportion to what they contribute, even if that guarantees unequal outcomes," end quote. When you look more deeply at the foundation, in this case, fairness, can you see that there might be some common ground? Both sides care about fairness. They just define it in totally different ways. Yet at the core, both sides are seeking the same goal. This goes for all of the moral foundations mentioned above. If you can start looking past your immediate mental blocks and note that perhaps both you and your political adversary are ultimately striving for the same morals, new doors to understanding might begin to open. Big thought number 5, the conservative advantage, addressing all foundations. Quote, "There's more to morality than harm and fairness," end quote. The author, who is upfront about being politically liberal himself, came to the conclusion that conservatives have a key advantage over liberals when it comes to winning elections. According to Haidt, liberals are focused on fewer moral foundations than conservatives. He tells us that liberals tend to focus on care and fairness much more than the other moral foundations, whereas conservatives show more balanced concerns across the other foundations as well. Some of the key foundations, such as loyalty, authority, and sanctity, which are fundamental concerns, were often not being outwardly addressed by the political candidates on the liberal side. For example, the foundation of sanctity, which can include the sanctity of marriage, is viewed very differently by liberals versus conservatives. There's some great discussion on this broader topic in The Righteous Mind that you'll no doubt enjoy delving into. So if you want to better understand the divisiveness that shows up in political discussions and religious beliefs, it can be very helpful to take a look at the core foundations, find a deeper common ground, and open your mind to where your side just might be falling a little short. Big thought number 6, selfish versus groupish. Individuals and communities both matter. Quote, "We take on group identities and work shoulder to shoulder with strangers toward common goals so enthusiastically that it seems as if our minds were designed for teamwork. I don't think we can understand morality, politics, or religion until we have a good picture of human groupishness and its origins," end quote. Drawing upon his moral psychology background, the author tells us that even though self-interest significantly impacts our behavior and views on areas such as politics and religion, it's also true that self-interest is only a partial influence. In addition to being selfish at times, he writes, quote, "It's also true that people are groupish. We love to join teams, clubs, leagues, and fraternities," end quote. Since our very survival as humans depended on our being part of groups or tribes, it's not surprising then that we would also band together to share common morals and points of view, whether those are political, religious, or otherwise. So to understand why someone might vigorously defend their political or religious view, and why they would feel quite righteous about these views, it can be helpful to understand that this is part of human nature, the instinct to have cohesive groups. Haidt summarizes this by saying, quote, "We evolved to live in groups. Our minds were designed not only to help us win the competition within our groups, but also to help us unite with those in our group to win competitions across groups." End quote. Wow. The more you read The Righteous Mind, the more you'll realize just why it's so hard to win an argument. There are so many factors that influence our righteousness that it becomes clear that convincing someone to see your side is going to take both conscious effort and mutual understanding. One aspect of this book that is particularly helpful is that it will likely challenge you to do a few things. Number one, be more open-minded about the other side's point of view, and number two, be more deliberate in forming your own rational and moral reasoning, knowing that there are mind tricks that might lead you to make snap judgments without careful thought. As always, awareness is the first step towards change. Big idea number seven, how religion is like football. They're both team sports. Quote, "We humans have an extraordinary ability to care about things beyond ourselves, to circle around those things with other people, and in the process, to bind ourselves into teams that can pursue larger projects. That's what religion is all about." End quote. Since we've already tackled the tough topic of politics, why not tackle an equally divisive subject, which is religion? Religion is a complicated topic, perhaps because there are so many differing beliefs, many of which are very strongly held and deeply rooted. We just talked about Haidt's insights that humans are both selfish and also groupish. Now let's consider how we group together when it comes to religion. One of the functions that religion seems to perform is to help bind us together into groups. The author shares insights from several anthropologists who suggest, quote, "Religions are sets of cultural innovations that spread to the extent that they make groups more cohesive and cooperative," end quote. There's quite an interesting discussion in The Righteous Mind about how religion plays a role in evolution, essentially helping our survival. It's no surprise that people fare better when they help each other, and it seems that religion helps to foster this cooperativeness among us. In a similar way, we become more cohesive when we're rooting for our favorite football team. And yes, for some people, being at a football game can certainly feel like a religious experience at times, including praying for your team to win, and maybe even a hallelujah when they do. The main point is that religion brings us together. It unites us. That all sounds pretty good and obvious, right? The problem is that with religion often comes righteousness. Do you know that expression, "my way or the highway"? That's how most people act when it comes to religion. Haidt says that the binding from religion, quote, "usually involves some blinding. Once any person, book, or principle is declared sacred, then devotees can no longer question it or think clearly about it," end quote. So there's binding, but also blinding. Now ask yourself, have you blindly followed certain aspects or principles of your religion without ever questioning or thinking about why you follow those, or if they're still appropriate for you? If you want to go deeper into this area, the spiritual category in your life book is a great place to consider your own uniquely authentic premises when it comes to religion and spirituality. This is a very personal and also a very important category, so it makes so much sense to give this one some deliberate thought. And don't stop there. The topics and principles addressed in The Righteous Mind will no doubt expand your awareness, deepen your understanding, and increase your open-mindedness across all life categories. This is one of those truly unique, thought-provoking books that will almost certainly have an impact on how you think about everything in your life. So there we have it, Jonathan Haidt's in-depth exploration of the moral drivers which influence our beliefs and behaviors. I hope you found it fascinating. Thank you so much for listening in. We look forward to sharing more wisdom with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.